Welcome to Real Asian Podcast. It's Ray Lu here, and it's just going to be me today, but I'm not all by my lonesome self. I am joined today with Emma Galbraith, the star of the film In Between Girl, which won the Audience Award at the 2021 South by Southwest Film Festival, directed by Mae McKino. Welcome, Emma. How are you doing? And glad to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. Glad to be here.
How about we just start with just a little introduction of yourself to our listeners?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name's Emma. I am an actor and community organizer currently based in Los Angeles. And as Ray said, I play Angie in Between Girl. And anything else to know about me?
Hey, whatever you want to share is completely up to you. Don't worry about it. But, you know, before we actually get into the film, I would love to actually talk about your journey as an actor thus far. So when did you catch like the acting bug?
So I did some acting camps when I was younger, like baby age, but I never really had the opportunity to get into it until high school, when one of my friends at the time convinced me to do a musical theater class with him in my sophomore year. It was totally random. And I was like, sure, you know what, whatever. And then I fell in love with it and really liked it. And from there, I just started auditioning for films and just kind of snowballed. Now here we are.
Do you remember the musical theater? Did you perform at the musical theater, do a performance, or was it just a class?
Yeah, so it was just a class, but that was kind of my gateway into the theater department at my school.
Performing and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's really cool. And musical theater too. That could be pretty tough. Are you, totally. Did you enjoy the singing aspect of it, or did you enjoy more of the acting aspect of it?
Oh, I mean, I think at first it was the singing because I came in with many years of classical piano and violin training, you know, classic. So I mean, that was sort of the initial, sticking point for me was the music. And then I realized that I actually really enjoyed acting. And it's funny because most of my high school career, when I was in high school doing the shows, I mostly did the musicals. And it wasn't until my senior year, I think, that I ever did a play, like a straight play. And then
in front of the, at the school, right? In front of the school.
Right. Yeah. Mm. So it really was, most of my experience was just musicals up until that point, which was an interesting introduction.
Do you remember the nerves that you had? Maybe you've got, did you feel any nerves kind of before you went on stage for the very first time, performed in front of people?
It's so funny that you asked that, because I was literally thinking about this yesterday in my dressing room. I was thinking about the first time I went on stage, and I was so nervous. And it was so funny to my friends because they were like, why are you nervous? And I was like, I've never done this before. And they're like, oh my God, it's your first time. You're such a baby. And I was like, yeah, I know. Yeah. So that's so funny because I was literally thinking about that yesterday. But I was very nervous. But I got used to it. I think you do it enough times, you start getting used to it. But there is, I mean, I don't think stage nerves ever completely go away. At least for me, not yet.
Right. And speaking with some young actors, experienced actors, performers, musicians, whatever the case may be, anytime, regardless of where they are in their career, mm-hmm. everyone always says like the nerves and the anxiousness never go away. Like it's like that constant fear of failure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that's probably, there's multiple reasons, but it's just like that feeling of like, I really hope I do well this time.
Totally.
You know?
I mean, it's like, it's a survival instinct, right? Like you're about to go onto a platform and bare your soul to 100 people. So
I hope they like me.
Exactly. So I feel like it makes biological sense for the body to have that same response over and over again, no matter how many times you do it, you know?
Yeah. You know, I get a similar feeling. See, but the thing is, the reason why I got into podcasting is because I can go back and edit myself and fix things, and I don't have to nail it on the first time.
Exactly. And that's also one of the beauties of film, right?
Exactly.
You can do it at least once. Yeah. And then there's always the editing process.
Yeah. So that's why stage acting is really impressive. Stage actors and live performances, like, you really have that one shot in a way. And even if you have multiple, if it's a long running show, then like you just got to hope that every performance that you do is you know, spot on kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's different eyes every time.
Different eyes every time, different reception. That's 100% correct. How about your parents? What was the conversation like when you told them when you that you wanted to get into acting?
I don't know if I ever really
you haven't told them yet.
down. Yeah, no, they don't know anything yet. I don't know if I ever really sat down and had a conversation with them. I think I started doing the class and then I just started kind of, I was like, you know what? I'll just audition for some student films. So I kind of just did that on my own. And then I kind of, I remember, I think I asked my parents to help me pay for baby's first casting call website subscription.
They're like, what?
I know. It was like $5 a month. And I was like, please. And they're like, okay.
No questions asked.
Yeah. They were like, I mean, it was like $5, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I think I took the time to sort of figure out if I was really interested in it or not. Mm-hmm. And I think just letting myself have the audition process, like learning it for the first time without, because I think talking to my parents right away would have felt like a commitment,
right?
You know, in a way that I wasn't ready for at the time. So I tried auditioning for things. And then eventually I was like, okay, this is something I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Please help me pay for headshots.
That's when you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So I think that was kind of the first conversation. But I think they kind of understood that I just needed to figure out if I wanted to do it myself first. So I don't think we ever really had an official conversation. But then once In Between Girls started happening and you know, I started booking some gigs, they were like, okay, this is a ride we're going on now. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. They're generally supportive, sounds like. They're not against it.
Oh, yeah. They're super supportive, which I'm very grateful for. Yeah.
Knowing most parents are probably thinking like, let's just make sure there's like a backup plan kind of thing. Like every my parents always like, even with the current job that I have right now, they're like, just make sure there's a backup plan. You never know. I'm like, okay, thanks. Totally. Thanks, Mom.
totally, yeah.
So what was it then that made you maybe internally kind of go over the switch into that commitment that you mentioned? Was it when you landed the role of In Between Girl, or is it something before that?
No, honestly, I think it was probably when I did my first student film project. It was really, it was like the film class at my high school. They had short films in the works all the time. And I just auditioned and booked like the lead role.
Yeah.
In a very, very short film.
You could say it. That's okay.
But no, and I don't know. I think the whole process of doing the audition, getting to talk to the people behind the project, getting to make friends with them, getting to like talk to them like about the character and develop
the whole process of it all, right?
The whole, not to sound super artsy fartsy, but the whole process. Like it definitely, I don't know. I just liked it. I just liked doing it and I liked every aspect of it. I liked watching them work as well. You know, I liked watching how the camera is supposed to work, how direction works. And, I was just like, this is fun. It was just fun at the time. And I think that was a big point for me, was like, I could do something and have it be considered work and be compensated for it, you know, either, you know, financially, but just like also emotionally and, you know, artistically,
spiritually.
Right. Exactly. You know, and also, have it be fun, which was like big
for me. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah. It really is. So I think honestly, it was just that first project. I was like, okay, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's do this.
And you're currently right now, performing at the Geffen Playhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's on stage, correct? I'm assuming. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have any preference now that you started on stage, got a chance to work in front of the camera, and now you're kind of back on stage? So far, I mean, is there any preference on acting on stage versus on camera?
That's a good question. They're just so different. I don't know if I could say for sure, because it really is like two different worlds and two different styles of performing. Like we were talking about earlier, like with it, I think it's just the two styles are so different. It's like playing two different sports or two different musical instruments. Just like the technique is different, you know, the process is different. But that was a really big thing. Actually, this is my first time ever doing a run, like a proper long run of a show. That's not just like, you know, a few weekends or something.
Right.
And I was really, at the beginning of the process, I was really finding myself adjusting to how it all works, how you form the story, how you form your character,
yeah.
In a way that it was very unfamiliar to me coming from a film background, really. So that was, I mean, it's been cool. I don't know, maybe when I have, you know, more experience and more time to think about it under my belt, I'll have preference. But right now I think I'm just like, they're so different to me that
mm-hmm.
it's like apples to oranges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many shows have you done so far in the current run?
Let's see. We started previews on the 10th and we've been doing 8 shows a week.
Woof.
So yeah. So like, oh my God.
It's not even 8 days in a week.
No, I know. We do like basic four shows every weekend, 5 if you count Friday as a weekend. It's wow. nuts. But I guess like 20 shows now, maybe?
Wow.
Something like that. It's great. Yeah.
So I learned this recently. I forgot where I learned this. I was listening to a podcast with like a stage actor that was being interviewed, and they were saying like in a stage performance in a long run, they do get an opportunity. Like one of the key differences versus a film production is that they get an opportunity to every night to kind of dive deeper into the character. Like each night there's like a slight adjustment to like something. Maybe it's not like so obvious, but internally for you as an actor, you're like, maybe I want to try this, say this line like this, or maybe, you know, kind of, oh, how does it feel when I do this? Do you kind of get that same sense now that you've done like 20 plus shows?
Totally. It's like, it's like filming a movie for like
20 months, times.
but like filming the same movie over and over again every night.
It's a Groundhog's Day kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for sure, which is something I really, really appreciate, because when you're doing, you know, when you have to get it in on like 3 to 8 takes in one day, and then the next day you think about it and you're like, crap, I should have done this. I should have tried this thing. The thing with theater is you can, you know? So I do really appreciate that, because I have found that every night I sort of understand what's going on a little bit better, because something shifts, something clicks. And also a lot of that honestly has to do with the audience as well. I think, especially for a show like the one we're doing, having different audiences there who respond to different things every night, like it just brings up different discoveries about what you can do, what you can emphasize, what kind of story you can tell.
I did a little bit of acting, high school acting in a play, not to your extent for sure, but it's just like hearing that kind of level and then that scale is like super interesting to me, because like I got maybe a taste of it. I did a very small role in Hamlet. I was like,
oh nice,
a page or something like that.
Nice. Love the page.
yeah super important, you know. I made sure to maximize my stage time with that one line that I had, you know?
Absolutely. Just
give
absolutely.
It an Oscar winning performance, hopefully,
of course.
But I want to talk about In Between Girl. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I think you had a fantastic performance in this film, truly. And I really do mean that.
Thank you.
You mentioned you did a lead role in a small student project, but this is your first lead role in a feature film, correct? In a full-on feature?
Yeah, that's my first feature, period. So yeah, before then I'd really just done student films at school and some short films in Austin. But yeah, this was my first feature film. Very, very cool and opportunity.
How long was the shoot?
15 days.
Okay.
15 over 19. We had 4 days of weekends here and there. But yeah, 15 days total.
I mean, it's put together really well. The film, the whole film is really great, and it's actually very quite emotional. Liam. What a tool.
Oh,
but, I just curious, what was that experience like being the first lead role in a feature film, working with May, working with the cast, crew, and everything like that?
I mean, it was magical. It was probably the best experience anyone could have had working on, you know, their first feature, let alone their first lead role in a feature. I mean, the whole team is just incredible. Like the reason why it's put together so well is because of how amazing the team is. from the cinematography to the editing to the direction to the production, it's just, it's incredible. And it was really, I felt like I learned so much on the job there. I was just constantly trying to soak in as much as I could from everyone around me doing their jobs and working at the speed of light, because shooting a feature film in 15 days is ridiculous. Yeah. on like the micro budget that we had.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. And they pulled it off. And like you said, like, I mean, May's story was just so authentic and emotional. And the other thing was that, I mean, this is an experience I don't think a lot of lead actors and features get to have, is that the script writing process was super collaborative. And it wasn't just like, we had a year between shooting the proof of concept trailer and the movie to finalize the script. And May was doing a lot of rewrites, and we had so many conversations about Angie's character and her arc that like a lot of elements from my life and from her life went into the script. So it was just such a collaborative process. And then also when we were actually shooting the movie, like so many, May did this really cool thing that where like we would do some takes on script, and then she'd be like, okay, screw the script, just have fun with it. Like here's basically just like improv the scene with these prompts. And a lot of that language ended up going into the movie.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of those scenes. There was the scene with, Angie and her dad in the apartment. The climax scene, that was, I think we decided to do that scene on the day of, and that was completely improv.
That was improv. The shouting and everything.
Literally, I think we chose to do that like 5 minutes before we did it.
Oh, wow.
So like stuff like that. It was just so like, somehow, despite the tiny amount of, you know, time that we had to film, May and the entire team just managed to make so many moments so spontaneous.
Right.
And, you know, and just like, spontaneous is the best word I can think of, in a way that like, you know, other teams, like it was just amazing to me to watch that, even with all the limiting factors there were, like time and budget and energy, frankly, like so many parts of the movie were just so unique and on the spot, and so that made it really, really special.
It's like a lot of things needed to work for it to really work.
Exactly. And people made them work, and it was amazing. And I think also like a huge shout out to the entire village behind this project, because so many parts of the production process came through from like favors from family and friends, whether it was like housing or funding or, you know, food. Catering.
What kind of food are we talking about?
Oh my God, it was so good. The crafty was incredible. And it was just like people would just like bring like home cooked meals, and we'd just like have a feast in the middle of the day. And it was just the best. It was just really the best. And I feel like that's one of the best ways, like, I think a movie can be made, is just with the help and support of family and friends, because then it's everyone's movie, you know?
That's really cool. I did read in the press notes that originally May had Angie, she was always going to be biracial, but it wasn't until May said that she met you that she decided to make Angie half white, half Chinese. I'm curious in terms of how that conversation went. Obviously, she probably went to you, and after speaking with you, she was like, okay, you know what? I'm actually going to be more, instead of having you, you know, fit into the character, it's almost kind of like the character was written after you.
Yeah. And I think also, I think the Angie's specific racial background wasn't ever fully locked down in before casting. So it wasn't like they made like a hard turn or anything. But I think also when May and I met, we had this similar experience of being half white, half East Asian. And I think like through our conversations, we just realized that we could tell a more authentic and genuine story if it pertained more to our specific, and also, you know, like her specific racial background, because even though she's Japanese and I'm Chinese, the shared experience of being specifically East Asian and white, there are a lot of common ground there. But yeah, I can't remember if we had any specific conversations about it before she cast me in the trailer. I think it was just something that she was still finalizing. And when I auditioned, it just felt right. Yeah.
Was there anything on set, being that you're for a first feature film as a lead, that, you know, came natural to you? Like sometimes you, I feel like, I imagine you kind of going into it, you're like, I don't know what to expect. But then there are certain things where you feel like, okay, I kind of get, like, I kind of get this, like this comes natural.
I mean, the improv was so much fun. yeah. And I was like,
that honestly, I could do.
Well, here's the thing. I'd always been so scared of improv. Like before, before I got into acting, I, like I said, I did a lot of music. Still do, but you know, I did way more before I really got into acting, but I was always so scared of doing like improv challenges in music.
Yes. And
yeah, because I mean, for me, like coming from a classically trained background, like I wasn't really trained in like thinking up my own melodies and whatnot. So that was always so scary to me. But then somehow when I got into acting and May was like, okay, do improv. I think I do remember being like terrified when at the audition, when she was like, okay, just like do a little improv scene. And I was like, okay.
That's it. That's the setup. Just,
yeah. Well, I mean, there were like details. She was like, okay, here's the setup and whatnot. But I'd like never done that before, I think ever. And I don't know. I think part of it is just like being able, I mean, this is also so universal to acting in general, but just like really focusing on soaking in the reactions of the people around you to things and like settling on what your character's reactions should be to things around them. Like all of that sort of like human emotion work was just so interesting to me. And it was really fun to pick up on that and develop that skill over the course of the movie.
Right.
And I mean, just all of the entire cast of In Between Girls so freaking funny that like it was like impossible not to have fun when we were doing those improv spontaneous bits together.
It's almost like it opens up a little piece in your brain that's like, oh my god, totally. This is possible to like just wing it and to just go with it, you know, and be okay with it.
And I think it changed me as a person, honestly. Like I feel like it taught me to be way, just that I could have more fun with what I'm doing, you know, and I could have, I could be looser and I have the freedom to make mistakes. And I think also, you know, I think coming into that improv from a film background rather than a theater background also helps a little bit, because you can stop, you know, and you can say like, hey, let's try that again.
Yeah,
In a way that it's harder to do with theater. I'm still very terrified of theater improv, I will say. But you know, I'm working on it. I'm getting there.
How did you hear about the role in the first place?
Yeah, so I was doing a short film with an organization in Austin called Creative Action that they train teenagers in film and in visual art and in theater. And I was working with the Film Collective. They do a short film every spring. And so I was working on that short film. I was in the cast. And then the director of the Film Collective, who did sound mixing for In Between Girl, he is friends with May, and he sent her my audition tape for the short film because he knew she was casting for her proof of concept trailer. And she saw me and she liked me. And so she also at the time had just sent out a casting call poster to a bunch of high school theater departments in Austin. And so I'd seen that on the Facebook page for my high school theater department. So I was literally in the middle of writing an email to May when I checked my inbox and I got an email from May saying, hey, do you want an audition for this movie? And I was like, yes.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was such a wild coincidence. But
and then how was the whole audition process?
It was one round, two rounds. It was just one round, I think.
Okay.
Nailed it. Sure. I'm pretty, what can I say? No, I remember exactly where we were. We were at the public library downtown, and I just went in and read, and you know, we had a little conversation, and they were all very, very cool and very fun to meet. And I read with Connor, I think, who edited In Between Girl, and I went home and I was like, okay, that was fun, you know.
Yeah, you never know sometimes, right? You try not to like cling on to it, have too high of hopes, right?
Exactly. And then a week later, May emailed and was like, hey, you want to be in the movie? No. Or, well, you want to be in the trailer was the initial question. Cause it was initially just an audition for the trailer. And then I said, of course. And then after we did the trailer, she was like, we'd love to keep you for the movie. And I was like, I'd love to be in the movie.
You're like, yeah. You're like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Also,
of course.
It's like, if you're in the trailer already, you know, you might as well keep going. Like,
I'm just saying. Yeah. So it worked out. It worked out. But yeah, it was a lot of kismet factors, I think.
Are you keeping your eyes and ears out for more future films? I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
Always
absolutely,
working.
Yeah. 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 I'm open for business, as they say. So I'm very, very excited to see what the future brings and all that.
It's really great. And, you know, with this podcast, and the show, it's given me a lot of opportunity and to do a lot of research in terms of like the history of Asian Americans in cinema, and obviously the future and how it's turning out with Asian Americans in cinema. But then hearing actors like yourself and filmmakers, I think it does bring me joy and a lot of hope to know that we can have these conversations and we're talking about acting and talking about creative spaces. And for someone like you, I think maybe 6 or 7 years ago, neither of us, both of us probably would not have been like so interested in like the cinema world. I mean, definitely there was a population or segment of that, but it just wasn't as so prevalent. And now it's like, I love hearing people say, hearing, especially with your conversation with your parents, like, oh yeah, like I'm in acting, and they're happy with it. They're supportive of it, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's really, really important for young Asian Americans to see a large enclave of Asian Americans in art and in theater and in storytelling. And I hope that, you know, I hope that this, like the wave of Asian American artists in cinema and in theater shows, you know, young, because that's what it did for me, honestly, was I think the more artists I got introduced to, more Asian and Asian American artists that I got introduced to when I started doing acting and started doing research on, you know, who is Asian and is in this industry, the more secure I started to feel in my ability to be able to express that part of myself, you know, in my life, you know, whether or not you work in the industry, I think being able to express yourself creatively in general is such an important life skill, you know, because it just like, you need it. As a human being, you need that. And I think that has been robbed of a lot of Asians and Asian Americans because of, you know, economic, financial pressures, and because of sociopolitical pressures, you know. And so I think having people in the industry who can show younger people that it is possible to be Asian and to express yourself emotionally and creatively is really, really important.
100%. Is there an actor right now that, or maybe back then before you got into acting, that you saw on screen and you're like, that person, I want to be that person?
Eva Noblezada.
Okay.
In Hadestown. I was a huge fan of Hadestown when the original concept album came out. And then when I saw it was on Broadway, I listened to it, and she inspired me so much. So her for sure. And also, you know, Michelle Yeoh, obviously.
Legend.
Yeah. Legends.
Still doing it.
Honestly.
So I want to talk a little bit about your organizing. Saw that you're very active, which is great. I've been in the organizing / nonprofit space for 5 years now. And as much as it is rewarding, it's also a lot of work. So for you, why is it important to you to continue to be an organizer while you're still pursuing your acting career?
I mean, look at where we are, right? Every time I think about how frustrating organizing is, because it is just constant frustration, right? And how demoralizing it can be. And every time I have to go through the process of reprocessing, you know, how demoralizing, how frustrating it is, I also remember that it is probably the most important work anybody can be doing, because if nobody is fighting, if nobody fights and nobody organizes, the planet and our species is just going to go downhill at a faster rate. And I mean, the whole point of it all, right, is to protect ourselves and to protect our people and to protect our communities and our planet and what makes us human. And if we don't have that, we don't have anything. And I think the reason why I keep doing it is because in 50 years, if we're around for that long, I want to be able to look at all of us, you know, not just me, but like all of us collectively, and know that we have done our absolute best and that we haven't given up. And I also think it is very, very possible to win concrete improvements in our lives, even though it seems frustrating. And I think that's the big thing, is that like organizing is so, can be so obscured by the emotions behind it, because like the concrete results of organizing and the strategy that leads to practically efficient and successful organizing can be so obscured by the emotions behind it, or rather in front of it, because the whole process is frustrating. The whole process is very emotional. You're dealing with all of these issues that are very emotional because they directly impact people's lives because they are important. And I think
rallying people all the time,
you're rallying people. You're constantly bringing up, really, because you're trying to directly address the things that are causing so much trauma for so many people, like COVID-19, climate disasters, financial and economic pressures, racial injustice. Like, you're directly addressing that trauma. And that is always going to be emotionally difficult. And I think, looking past the emotions and looking past the feelings, the reality is that we have the ability to make things better, despite the frustration, despite the trauma. And I think holding to that, even when it feels like it's hopeless, holding to that fact that it is possible to make things better and it is possible to be living in a better society than we are, is what helps keep me at least going in the organizing world, because I am constantly reminding myself, if we don't do this, what else is there? You know,
have you found, you know, peers of your generation, your colleagues, it being easier? I think easier might be a misplaced word, but I only say that because, like, when I was younger, I couldn't imagine myself or even just like my friends, and it may have been just been the group that I was with. But I couldn't imagine myself caring about a lot of the issues that are so important today. That I feel like the younger generation has been much more aware and cognizant about, and a lot more vocal about. But so yourself, from your perspective as an organizer, like, have you found it much more like easier to galvanize people, to get people kind of into the messages and, you know, organizing people, or is it all the same?
No, that's a good question. I think it's complex. So I think, like, social media has played a huge part in just getting people more information than they had, you know, even 10 years ago, which has its good and bad sides, right? For, I mean, what the good part is, obviously, like, people can be more informed. The bad part is that social media apps are designed to keep you on them. And media apps in general, like news, is designed to keep you on them, because they're trying to sell you something. So the strategy then is to just constantly traumatize its audience with all of this horrible news all of the time, which eventually leads to burnout and exhaustion, but you can't stop scrolling. And then you're just doom scrolling. And then you think everything's hopeless. And then you go back on social media to try to find people who are doing something, but then you get back into the cycle of traumatic news and information, and it just never stops. So that's the bad part, right?
And that's in one day.
Exactly. And then there's this thing of, like, then that causes this chain of, like, people trying to make themselves feel better by pointing out injustices that are happening. But then that just re-traumatizes other people. And it also tricks people into thinking that they are somehow doing something by just staying on these apps that are trying to sell you something, which is not anybody's fault who's on these apps. It's just the way they're built and the way they're designed to psychologically trick you. So I think social media has played a huge part in informing people, but I don't think politically it is necessarily I don't think it's necessarily changed a lot about, how young people interact with political issues. I think, from what I've noticed, I think the strongest strategy to get people galvanized by something is always going to be face-to-face conversation.
Yeah.
Social media is never going to be able to replace that in terms of effectiveness, because ultimately what you're trying to do is build community. And so I think the top reason why I see young people not engaging, people in general, specifically young people, but I think this applies to people in general, and I'm sure it applied to people and young people 10 years ago, is just the pressure, the outside pressure of staying on the grind, basically. Whether that's school, whether that's your job, whether that's family pressures, whether that's, again, financial pressures, you know, money, like there are so many societal pressures that keep people working, keep people disengaged from what's going on. Because it's zapping people's energy to be able to focus on injustice. And I think like having that energy is a huge privilege. So I think that's probably remained constant throughout the years and probably throughout the decades, is that the reason why people of all ages can't stay engaged in politics and in social issues, even if they want to, is because of time and because of energy and because of money. And so I think it's really important for organizing efforts, especially now as we're seeing like so many crises all at once traumatize people to the point where like it is much easier and probably better for people's bodies to focus on sleep and focus on getting food rather than focus on organizing, because there's not enough capacity in the body to do all of these things at once and keep yourself healthy at the same time. So I think one of the best things organizations can do now is make sure that they have an arm that is designed to support the health of the community that they're trying to build. Like, for example, the Black Panthers free breakfast program was a great example of this, and their community, and not just theirs, but, you know, community health programs all over the world. And especially that have popped up since the pandemic started, you know, community-based measures and programs to support the physical and mental health of people. That is such a core part of effective organizing now, I think. Yeah, because you need to be able, you can't run on fumes. You can't bite the hand that feeds you forever, which is the other thing. So people need to be able to seek sustenance and seek health outside of the systems and forces that are also oppressing them. And so that's where organizing, I think, comes in, is if you can design programs to keep people safe and keep people healthy and fed and well rested, that are outside of the systems that you're trying to fight, then you have a strong system set up. Then you have a strong community and strong organization. So I think it's probably, I think that's just the biggest thing, is like societal pressures are designed to keep people in many ways, like, just disengaged from fighting the things that are causing the societal pressures, you know, because we exist in the same, in this like hamster wheel.
If I'm understanding correctly, it's just like, you know, social media, and I agree with you, that's like the biggest difference here. Even if you go way back into how organizing and activism used to be, like in the 60s and 70s, 80s and all that, social media has definitely made things a lot more accessible and a lot more people informed. But what you're saying is that it still doesn't, you know, still doesn't excuse the amount of work that it requires to actually to push the needle, sometimes even if it's just like a little bit. Right.
Absolutely. You're going to say.
It's helped people connect a lot easier, but you still have to get bodies to show up. And that's where the whole grassroots movement and work kind of comes into play.
Exactly. I think social media is best used as like a minimal communication tool, you know, like be able to contact people so you can get them to a place, but they have to be already organized for you to be able to get them to get to a place. You know what I mean? Like you already have to have had those conversations with them. And I think probably the greatest curse that social media has given organizing efforts and social justice in general is the myth that awareness is the same as change. Mm-hmm. So like so many efforts on social media are like raising awareness for things, but what is awareness? That's just another phrase for that re-traumatizing of all of, you know, all of these issues compounded on each other that social media apps throw at you, to the point where you're like, okay, I get it. Everything's bad. I can't keep track of all these bad things in my brain, but you know, social media doesn't give you an avenue to fix the bad things. And so that's why organizing offline is so important, I think. Mm-hmm. And why, like, it's really important to have that, that consciousness about social media, that like, it's not designed to help you. It's designed to keep you on there so they can sell you something. Mm-hmm. And two, like, you don't have to focus on all of the bad things at once. The best thing probably to do is to just talk to people offline, get offline and talk to people about issues and talk to people about issues that are important to you. And then work from there to find concrete solutions, despite, you know, and even in process with all of those traumatic feelings, because that's the only way actual concrete change is going to happen.
Well, thank you for that. That gives me a lot of hope for future generations to come. We're turning the corner into the final segment. I would love to do just, let's just do a quick lightning round question. Very easy questions, just to kind of get to know you a little bit better. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Try not to kill yourself over these questions.
Okay. That's my best.
Okay. Number one, would you rather give up all things noodles or all things rice?
That's so mean.
I said, don't kill yourself over these questions. God.
Oh, crap.
Think about all the noodle dishes you could possibly lose, or all the rice dishes that you could possibly lose.
Okay, I hate myself for saying this. Probably rice.
So you keep noodles.
Yeah, I love the slurping action too much.
Yeah. I am in the noodle camp as well, only because my favorite like dish is pho, and not being able to eat that just hurts my soul.
There are also so many different kinds of noodles. I think that's the other thing. There are like so many different ways you can make noodles and things you can
egg
make noodles out of.
Rice noodles.
Yeah. Sweet potato noodles. Oh my God.
Okay. Good. Glad we're in an agreement there.
Okay.
What's your favorite smell?
My mother's soup. She makes like very like clear soup out of like turkey or like pork. Or chicken, and that's probably my favorite smell.
Now, does she make that when you see her, every time you see her, is that more of like a special occasion or when you're
usually sick? I mean back in the day it used to be like special occasions and when I wasn't feeling well, but I think now it is kind of like whenever I like go home, she'll like she has this like huge like vat, like this like stainless steel vat, and she'll just like, you know, like 3 gallons of water in there, and then like a whole head of cabbage, and then like pork, you know, whatever, and then like daikon, and just kind of boil it.
You can smell it from outside the house, probably.
Exactly. Shout out, mom.
All right. Would you rather meet your great grandparents or great grandchildren?
Probably great grandchildren, because if we're going by like time travel laws, I could see like what's up in their world and like what mistakes we made, and then like come back here and be like, okay, here's what we're doing different.
Yeah, that's exactly the same logic that I use, because I would rather meet my great grandchildren. I would just want to see how I did, what the world is like. Have we progressed? You know, what can I do to, you know, make things a little bit, you know, easier for my grandchildren.
Exactly.
I would also be, you know, terrified sometimes.
Oh, like, totally. Oh, are you kidding? Like that's why I hesitated. Cause I was like, I would be so scared.
Yeah.
You're like, oh God.
Most people I've asked this question, they do say grandparents, because I think it's a whole thing of like wanting to know your future and what kind of legacy that you make, or what kind of legacy that you come from.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Would you rather be able to speak every language in the world or communicate with animals?
Oh my God. Probably speak every language in the world, because I feel like that would be more helpful. That'd be so helpful for organizing. Are you kidding? Oh my God.
There you go.
So I think like
organize the entire world.
Exactly. Like from a practical standpoint, that, and then like in my free time, I just get like really like cozy with animals and try to figure out as many of their cues as possible. So sort of like make up for not being able to talk to them.
Right. I feel like if you're able to communicate with animals though, you'd be the very first superhero.
This is true. This crap.
But then again, speaking every language in the world, that would technically make you a superhero as well.
Yeah. It'd also be super helpful for acting. Let's be real.
That's true. The opportunities are endless.
Are we saying like fluency in every
fluent
language?
Like, oh my God. You are the world's communicator.
I just think that would be so, like, you could talk to anybody. That would be so cool. And like, yeah, okay, I'm definitely going with humans. I think, yeah,
you could do more with them.
Mm-hmm. And like, you'd be able to, oh my God, you could be able to like read Braille and do like all of the sign languages. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Ancient language.
Yeah, that's it. Definitely. Yeah, definitely humans. Oh my God.
we're making a strong case here.
Yeah, I'm nerding out right now just thinking about it.
Okay, lastly, very simple one. Favorite movie genre?
It's a good question. What have I been watching recently? I've been watching more TV shows than movies recently, but
it could be just genre in general, I guess.
Yeah. Honestly, like sci-fi probably. Okay. For movies and for,
classic.
For
nice.
Yeah, for shows. I'm really into animated shows. I love animated shows. My favorite show of all time is She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. Mm. Love that show. So I think, yeah, probably sci-fi and animation. I'm a 5-year-old in my heart and in my soul and in all ways.
don't ever lose that. Don't
exactly.
ever lose that.
Exactly.
Is there a favorite sci-fi movie that comes to mind? Maybe top one?
Literally the only thing I can think of is a movie I haven't even seen yet. It's Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'm desperate to see that.
Oh, you haven't seen that
yet. I am
yet.
Desperate to see it. I like haven't had a single spare second of free time to go see it.
I know what that's like, yeah.
So badly. So that's on the top of my to watch list for sure.
That one's got not even just sci-fi. That one's got all types of genre. It's got everything in it all at once.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
I hope before this episode comes out, you get a chance to see it.
Thank you. Then
you can let us know. We did an episode on it, but I actually wasn't on that episode. But kind of like you, that's why I understood, is because when the movie came out, I just had zero time to watch it. But my co-hosts were like, we got to do this movie. Mm-hmm. Everyone's talking about it. And I was like, look, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I just don't have the time to watch it right now.
Totally.
But it's like, you guys could do an episode and I'll edit it and everything like that.
Yeah.
But when I did get to see it, it was pretty solid.
Yeah. I think honestly, like, even more than sci-fi, like surrealism in general, I just love surrealism in like art and books and films. I just think it's such a cool style and such a cool storytelling like method. So anything surrealist, I like.
Okay, Emma, thank you so much for being on this episode today. I hope you had a really good time.
Thank you so much for
sitting down with me and having this nice conversation. Everyone, if you get a chance, go check out In Between Girl. Where can they watch it? Is it available on streaming?
Yeah, so it's on video on demand right now. I think pretty much all platforms, but particularly iTunes, Apple TV, Amazon, and also VOD. But I think you can find it, you know, if you look up VOD, you'll be able to find it.
Sounds good. I'll add the links on our show notes. And everyone, keep an eye out for Emma. She's a rising star. I'm sure we'll see more of you. I'm sure of that.
Thank you.